Welcome to the From Battle to Business podcast. In this podcast, business coach and fellow veteran Dean Van Dyke will bridge the gap between service and civilian life, helping guide veteran business owners to supercharge their business and unlock hidden profits. You wouldn't go into battle alone, and now you don't have to in business. Let's get to it.
Welcome to From Battle to Business, where we dive into the raw, real journey from the battlefield to the boardroom. I'm Dean Van Dyke, and today I'm joined by Isabel Fortin, where we dive into the power of human-centered leadership with an extraordinary guest. Isabel's journey began in the Royal Canadian Air Force, where she honed her communication and leadership skills at the prestigious Royal Canadian Leadership School. After transitioning into the corporate world, she quickly noticed the stark contrast between military teamwork and corporate isolation, leading her to create a business that puts people first. Now, with over three decades of leadership experience, Isabel empowers CEOs and HR leaders to build strong, engaged teams through her innovative behavioral and motivational assessment tool. She's also the host of the Human Leader live stream, where she highlights the stories of leaders who challenge the status quo. Get ready for an insightful conversation on how human-centered leadership can transform teams, boost retention, and drive success one person at a time. Welcome, Isabel.
Thank you, Dean. So happy to be here.
It's great to have you. It's not too often I've got an international star on the podcast. So I appreciate you joining us tonight.
Thank you for that. I praise from you.
Well, so in 60 seconds or less, tell us who Isabel is.
Well, I am a leadership coach that is specialized in creating team synergy. So, and I do that by tapping into the uniqueness and the unique abilities of every single team members, because individuality really is all that's cracked up to be, and great teams are built one person at a time. So that's what I do.
That is so true. So true. So you spent time in the Royal Canadian Air Force. Mm-hmm. And as I spent time in the Army and the Navy, we don't tend to focus on the individual in the military. It's more about the team aspect of how we work and what we do. But when you think about human-centered leadership, though, in the military is all about you will do this, you will do that. And so it's very different than corporate life, because I learned the hard way. Dictatorial leadership doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And luckily I learned it a long time ago. But how did you take your experience in the Air Force and then determine, as you were working in corporate life, that corporate isolation is something that's very it's very relevant to folks, and it's not a good thing. So how did you draw that military teamwork to corporate isolation? How did you gain that insight?
Well, the first thing that struck me with the first civilian leader I had, my immediate supervisor, is just how little leadership skills she actually had. And I only worked there for 5 months, but for every day that I worked there, I went, how could this person be put in a leadership position? And I thought, well, okay, so it's isolated to her and to this company. And like most people in corporate America, I did the same thing. I didn't leave a job. I left a boss. And so I went to the second company and I went, uh-oh, this just more of the same. And then third company, again, more of the same. And then it kind of dawned on me, okay, so the problem isn't the individual, is they are not provided this training. And so that's one of the things that didn't exist in the military world, is in the military, in order to be promoted to a leadership role, you have to have leadership training, because leadership is a skill. So it can be taught, it can be learned, it can be practiced, and it's a skill. But in corporate America, even now, I mean, we're decades later, not to, you know, jump the gun on how old I am, but it is still decades later, and only 6% of people in leadership have leadership training. And that's the people who actually get leadership training are usually work for large corporation who understand that being a leader is about taking care of the people. In mom and pop shops and even companies of up to 500 employees, I've worked with leaders with CEOs that had never touched a leadership book in their entire life. And
Wow.
how can you not? It's a skill. You learn how to walk, that's a skill. You learn how to talk, that's a skill. You need to learn how to lead. So that was the first thing that struck me is okay, there's a disconnect here. We need to bridge that gap.
And that's so true. And I've got somebody you could coach and mentor. I think is Jamie Dimon. He's the CEO of JP Morgan Chase. I think he needs some. I read today that. So he's pushing the return to office, and he's getting pushback. And I guess they turned off their internal communication channel because it just got to, people were just venting. And I guess now there was a petition, and he's like, "Eh, whatever." And I'm like, "You need to get over yourself."
Yeah, absolutely.
But this guy is very influential as CEO and of the one of the largest banks in the US, but yet he shows no leadership. How does someone rise to that level, but then is just, I'm trying to be nice here. I'm trying to be nice.
It's your show. You can say
I don't
whatever you
really.
want.
How is he being such a complete and utter failure at leadership? How's he demonstrating that at his level?
Well, unfortunately, they are not few and far between, right?
True, true.
So as far as sociopath, and I am not saying that this person is a sociopath. That is not what I'm saying. I've never met the man. I don't know. What I'm saying is only 3% of the world population is are sociopath. That's just a study or a known fact. However, in the corporate world, in CEO positions of Fortune 500 companies and banks and really, really, really big companies, this number, the number of sociopath, is actually 6%.
What?
So that
Oh,
means
smaller.
that,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah.
So that
Yep.
means there's a larger group of people who that are sociopath that gets to be CEOs of Fortune 500 and large corporation. And I'm actually, unfortunately, not surprised by that because it looks like drive, but sociopaths are extremely good at faking empathy, and they're extremely good at tapping into people's fears. So, what is most likely going to happen in the future is that people are less and less and less afraid because job security doesn't exist like it did 40 years ago.
True.
You don't get young people that are in their 20s now that were born, the millennials that were born in 2000, like between 2000 and 2005, let's say, and thinking that they're going to join the company, work there 40 years, collect the gold watch, and leave with a pension. They know that doesn't exist. And furthermore, not only that no longer exists, but on top of it, people don't stay in the same career for all their lives anymore. So, command and control. I understand why leaders use command and control because it's easier on the leader.
Oh, sure.
But command and control doesn't work. And now, people, the employees, the workers, they have options.
It is interesting though, when you rise to that level, say it's, I'll just keep harping on this guy because I really,
Because you're allowed.
It grates me to no end to know that he's actually in a leadership position and making a decision. And I've worked for bad, I call them managers because they weren't leaders. But when you think about the inspiration that got you started, right? So all of your corporate experiences, you're going through these and you're thinking, what is this? It seems like it just follows me from experience to experience to experience. And then you realize, wait a minute. When I was in the military and when I moved to the next leadership role, there was a training block. And there was a you went through different stages of your training and you didn't pass go until you completed it. And today, it's one of the things where there's tons of leadership training out there, right? And usually the ones that take advantage of, if they don't get it at the corporate level, the ones that take advantage of it by hiring somebody like yourself or attending one of your classes, those are the ones that grow, but yet there's still a lot of people that don't realize that leadership is a skill because there's been this big misconception that people are born this way.
True.
Right. Why do you think people think that leadership can't be taught?
Yes, I still hear that. I still hear, oh, well, we promoted her because she's a natural born, leader or him or whomever. But I think because people still have an extremely huge misconception of what leadership is. So, and in corporate America, they confuse management and leadership.
Let's
So,
dig into that.
management is about getting things done. Leadership is about taking care of the people who gets the job done. So management is task oriented, leadership is people oriented. And the greatest thing I've ever heard from one of the greatest CEOs around the world, Richard Branson, he was asked in an interview by a French reporter, and the question was, so how do you take care of your customers? And he snickles, right? He doesn't take life very seriously, this man. He doesn't take himself seriously either. So, which is very positive. I truly mean that in a great, great way. And he kind of laughed a little bit. He giggled a little bit. He said, I don't take care of my customers. I take care of my employees. They take care of my customers. So that's the job of a leader. Richard Branson is not working inside any of his companies. He's working on his companies.
Right.
And that's a big difference. So when you think about leadership, again, I don't blame people, especially not middle management, because that's the hardest job that exists on this planet
It
right now.
is.
So I don't blame anybody, but command and control is easier on the boss, plain and simple. So if, as a leader, let's say the company belongs to you, so we'll make it easier. The company belongs to you. If any of the leaders in your organization, if in their job description, it doesn't say anywhere that their job is to take care of the people. And if it's, you got to produce this report, and you got to produce this report, you got to produce this report, and you have to have this done, then you're using the wrong word. You're task oriented.
Right.
Job of a leader is to take care of the people. How are you? Do you need training? Do you need tools? How can I support you? They don't work for you. You work for them. And when you understand that, that's when it shifts. That's when you get everything you want.
And that's, Zig Ziglar said it best when you Oh my gosh, now I'm going to forget the quote. When you help when you help others get what they want, you get what you want in return.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the things that struck me coming through my corporate career and the leadership roles I had was the inverted pyramid. The leader is always at the top of the pyramid, right? No, you need to flip that around. Yep. So when you think about that, how does in middle management, you're
Almost
right. They're
impossible.
typically left behind, right?
Yes.
They're you got a star performer. Case in point, I was doing great at my engineering job, was doing wonderful. Oh, we're going to promote you. I just left the military. Well, not just left, but and got promoted. Zero leadership training other than the military. So in that leadership training maybe didn't parlay quite into corporate, but get into my corporate experience, start leading a team of 20 some odd folks, and crashed and burned almost. I actually grabbed a parachute, my older brother, and I let the plane crash, but I used the parachute. But one of the things I didn't do was self-development at that point, right? So what role does like self-leadership, personal development play into becoming that effective leader?
All of it. That plays all of it. And there are three pillars to what I do with a leader, and it is the everything I teach, everything I show them how to do, everything is based on these three pillars. So that's humility, empathy, and adaptability. Because it's not about you, it's about them. Humility, because it takes, you and I have had this discussion before. It takes an insane amount of humility to be a a good leader and a great leader, because you have to be willing to get out of the way. You are a cheerleader. That's your job. It's to support them, love them, treat them, train them, help them develop, help them be better. And every time, the first time I say that to every leader that I've ever worked with, they all go, "Yeah, but I'm the boss. Yeah, but it's not about you." That's A. And B, and I love when they say that. And B, I call that selfish humility. You get out of the way because that's how you get everything you want. I'm not telling you you don't matter. I'm not telling you not that you don't deserve what you want. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying the way the humans are made, the made that we all are, our favorite topic of conversation is ourselves. Let them talk about themselves. Let them support them, encourage them, provide for them, be there for them. They're gonna give you everything you want. And Dean, I'm sure you know this as a boss and as an ex-military or a veteran, is they don't need a lot. They just need a little bit. And if you give them just a little bit of recognition, if you give them just a little bit of empowerment, if you give them just a little bit of autonomy, they will walk in broken glass for you. And they will, because they're not fighting for power, they're fighting for recognition, because that's a human need. So as a leader, if you're not willing to be humble, you will fail.
You'd be humbled.
If you're willing, yes.
Yeah,
Yeah,
true. Yeah, true.
absolutely.
If you
Yeah.
you'll be humbled pretty quick by your team.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you always hear about be get to know them. Like you have two ears, one mouth, so you do more listening than talking. And you know, one of the things that I throughout my career is that recognition piece that you talked about. Everybody thinks recognition needs to be a promotion or, you know, money, which is very fleeting. We all know that that doesn't last. But what are some simple things that leaders can do to recognize their team?
Well, show genuine interest in who they are as a human being. Have weekly meetings. Of course, if you lead a team of 700, you can't do that, but meet your direct reports individually. Don't do that as a whole. Don't do that in a gang or in a group. Do that individually. On a weekly basis, give them 10 minutes, 15 minutes, go to their desk, not in your office. Go to their environment, bring them a coffee or invite them for a coffee for on a break. Go to break with one of them and don't talk about anything that has to do with work unless it's how can I help you? And ask them about who they are and care about the answer. And that's the key, is care about the answer. Ask them how their wives are doing, their kids, and did you go watch the soccer game? And show human interest. It's Simon Sinek that says, if you don't know people, you don't know business. Well, he's 100% right, because 100% of your customers are humans, and 100% of your employees are human. So show genuine human interest in them. Start with that. And if you
And
want to
that,
ex go ahead, sorry, Dean.
no, go ahead. Go
I
ahead.
was just
Sorry.
gonna say what I do with when I start working with a leader or I start working with a team, the first thing that I do is a psychometric assessment. And I tell the leaders the reason we do this assessment is because this is speed dating. In 90 minutes, I will tell you how to communicate, what's their behavioral preference, are they task oriented, are they people oriented, do they prefer you communicating through memo, through email, through text message, or do they actually need you to show up at their desk and smile and ask them how their mother is? Because some people need that more than others. How much
Right.
recognition do they need? How do they learn? How do you learn? Do you learn in only subject that you're interested in, or you'll pick up a book on electricity just because it was written? Because some people are extremely curious and their cognitive motivation is through the roof, and you can
Right.
talk about anything with these people. So learn what is their ideological motivation, what drives them, what makes them tick. And that's truly speed dating. It's just in 90 minutes, I can tell you exactly what to avoid, why to avoid this way of communication. And when you know that, it's exponential what you're going to get out of your people.
Well, I think that's because I know early on in my corporate career, we went through the Myers-Briggs just to kind of figure out, you know, and I know there's many different of the colored one and predictive index and all that stuff. But, you know, just knowing that, like, I think mine's ISTJ on the Myers-Briggs scale. And everybody looks at me like, you're an introvert? I'm like, yeah, I'm usually the quietest guy in the room because I'm listening to what's going on around me. And so it's interesting though when you work with leaders and you give them this information, it because some of them might be like, what? That's who I am? How do they respond when you take them through this? You know, it's eye-opening, and they're like, "Holy cow! I need to go. I need to go for a walk. I didn't know this about myself."
I have a funny story about that. I did the assessment, and I knew it was a test, and I'm okay with being tested. I did a decade in the military, it was the it was a CEO of a large corporation here, about 700 employees, and I was doing the test on the CEO first because if he bought it, then everybody or pretty much everybody would
Right.
get it. At least, his C-suites and their direct reports. And his need for challenges and his need for being in charge and being controlled was like 30 out of 100. And that's usually the first thing that we address when we go through the reports together, because the debrief is long. It's 90 minutes, and I truly need the 90 minutes. I have a lot of information. So, and right away, like I could see, his arms crossed, and he's looking at me, and that was in person, and he's looking at me, and I know he's gonna challenge that. He's like, "This is BS. You can tell this is BS. I'm the CEO, founder, blah blah blah." And he goes on with all his credential, and I'm listening to him. And when he was done, I kind of very kindly, and I knew I could push my luck with this guy. Like I had enough meeting with him that I knew where I could go and where I couldn't go. And I said, "Okay, same amount of money, same advantages, no changes in your personal life, no changes in your wife's closet," because I had met his wife and I knew she was a closed freak. "No changes, none, no changes, none whatsoever. I insist, no changes, sir." And then he's looking at me. I said, "Would you seriously run a company of 700, people, or would you go fish all day long by yourself?" And he said, "Oh, I'd go fish by myself." I said, "And there you have it." I said, "The test, the assessment, doesn't evaluate what you're capable of doing. It evaluates what you prefer to do. And if you had a choice, and if you keep the same standard of living, if you didn't have," and I knew I knew I was pushing my luck, "but if you didn't have to prove to daddy that you succeeded in your life, you'd be a fisherman." He said, "Yes, I would." And then from that moment, he stopped pushing me back because he knew. But we all have these moments in these particular kind of assessment. And I've taken a lot of them, just, a little bit by curiosity and a little bit because I need to know what other coaches are using out there, just, so I'm prepared when I, "Oh yeah, but I did this test," and I did, so I know what I'm, what it's all about. They are not all created equal, of course. None of it is all created equal. They're not all bad, not at all. I work with a test called Nova. It's from Switzerland. It's been around for about 2.5 decades. But I use this one because it not only taps into your cognitive and behavioral communication preferences and the way that you need or that you want to lead and be led, but it also taps into your deep motivations. And your behavioral and your cognitive preference is like the kind of car that you drive, but your motivation is what fuels the car. And I say that to every leader when they ask me, "How do I motivate my people?" I said, "You don't. You can't motivate anybody to do anything, anytime, anywhere. You can't. That's impossible. What you can do, though, is find out what motivates them and tap into that. That's what you do." So that's why I chose that particular test.
And that's one of the things that, when you think about people, right? So You as a leader, you're not going to motivate them. It's impossible. You might as well push a boulder uphill.
That's right.
And but if you understand who they are, what makes them tick, and you understand, and you've kind of got to, if you've got a team, you're going to need to do it as a collective, kind of understand what are the big motivators that will get people to move or even push that boulder uphill for you, right? And once you have that, it makes a world of difference. And so what, so say that CEO would have never come to you. What could, other than go fishing all day, what could he have done? What are some practical steps he could have done to become more of that human-centered leader? Because there's, if you were to coach everybody in the world that need leadership training, I'm not sure how you would do that, for one, but well, maybe you could. I don't
No, thank you.
know. How could he have improved? Maybe not, he probably wouldn't have improved as quickly, because obviously accountability, coaching, the assessment, he's going to get there quicker with your help than he is by trying to do this on his own. But what, how does one do that if there's, if they don't come across Isabel?
Well, I have two answers to your question. The first one is the leaders who need my help the most are the leaders who will never call me.
Oh.
Well, because they don't think they need help.
Ah, okay.
So I'm, thinking of certain world leaders right now that, should get a smack across the head, but no, that's not what I mean. actually, that is exactly what I mean. But the first thing is wanting to. And that was one of the things that he did absolutely right is, hey, listen, I am losing key people.
Oh.
I'm hurting things through the grapevine. I don't know what's true, what's not true, what's being exaggerated, what's not. He was in a particularly weird position where he was slowly bringing his grown kids into the mix, and
Oh,
that was
yeah.
like oil and water. And so he needed to improve a few things in order to eventually pass the company down.
Sure.
But with any leaders, the first step is, hey, let's explore what I can improve on. And if they don't have that, then I can't work with them. And quite frankly, I don't want to. Because even though I really truly love the pretty money, there isn't enough money in the world to work with people who don't want to work with me, or who don't want to do the work, because they
Right.
can want to do the work and not want to work with me. That's fine. So that's the first thing, is wanting to. And the second thing is being extremely ready to be humble and say, okay, so let's pick it up from this point forward, and what can I improve, and how can I improve, and I'll do it. So these are the first two steps.
So be coachable.
Be coachable, be open. Yeah, be open.
Yeah,
And
humble.
they're pretty much all the same. They start pushing back, and I don't scare easy. I'm a pretty tough nut to crack, and when I'm in a coaching position, I don't take many things differently. I've been told to go to hell, that I've been fired so many times, it's not even funny. But yeah, I know, and I have a coach I tell to F off a few times a year. And when I do that, I know that's because she's right on the button, and so does she. And we end up laughing about it because, of course, as soon as I'm getting to ready to walk out of her office, I go, "Okay, I'll see you in 2 weeks." You know, so obviously I'm not gonna fire her, but we all get. Yeah, I am like that. I know I'm like that, and it takes us a while to get to the point where we can laugh about our flaws. But you got to be willing to laugh about your flaws, right?
That's true. That is true. It's one of the things where being aware and then being able to laugh about it and chuckle. And I think that I really hate to even go there, but it's a lot of that comes with maturity, right? Because you know, this silver is not there for a reason.
That's why
So,
I painted mine dirt purple.
well, that's why I keep this short. Because otherwise, I'd be like, ugh, that stuff, no way.
For
But
people
when
in audio, I have purple hair, and Dean is pointing to the fact that he shaves his head on the side not to show the gray.
That is so true. That is so true. So when you think about ideal clients, obviously CEO, 700 person company, it probably a sweet spot. So who would be like an ideal client for Isabel?
I don't have a preferred industry because people are people, and it doesn't matter if
It's
you're
true.
manufacturing underwear or if you're working in nuclear science, people are people. So that doesn't bother me. Truth be told, I'm not a as comfortable in large corporations just because of the red tape to get in. And
Sure.
I'm not a red tape kind of person, which is one of the many reasons I left the military.
We don't
That
have red tape in the military.
oh yeah, here we did. And everything was in five copies and five different colors, and they went to five different places. And yeah, so anyway, I know you were being ironic. Mind you know, it's if the leader. If we have a good print, a good rapport, a good connection, or whatever, I will accept it to work with large corporations. It's just I am not going to jump through hoops to do it.
Sure.
That being said, I always insist that the leader that I work with are in charge of their. They have a budget. They have an operating budget. I don't want to convince somebody. First of all, I don't try to convince anybody, but I don't want to be quote unquote hired by one leader and then having to report to the CA or having to report to another department who know nothing about me to make a proposal so that they can approve the spend. No, I'm not jumping.
That's
So
red tape.
exactly. That's just more red tape. So it truly doesn't matter if it's middle management or if it's higher or if it goes all the way up to the CEO. And even for middle management, if they have a budget and they want to hire me, maybe they're not going to be able to change the entire company culture, but they can change and they can modify things to make at least their everyday life better as a leader and for their teams. So, and you change anything from within. That's the best way to start, right? So, yeah, so ideal client is leader up to about a group of 20. Bigger than this becomes difficult unless we divide. I mean, if you have a team of 100,
Oh, sure.
we can do five, five groups of 20. But yeah, that's it. Any industry, anywhere in the world.
Awesome. So, since you're in the Air Force, and as we get ready to land the plane here, are there any books that you recommend to your clients, you know, as you take them through this journey?
Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek. Because leaders should eat last.
Agree. They should never be at the front of the line.
No.
Agreed. Well,
Yeah.
this has been. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just gonna say that that would be the first book that I recommend. Yeah.
I would agree. It's an amazing book. Not quite sure where it is in my bookshelf here, but it's there. So as we get ready, like as I said earlier, as we get ready to land the plane here, where can my audience go to find out more about you and the amazing work that you're doing?
Two places. My website is againsttheordinary.org. So that's the name of my company because I want people to go against the ordinary leadership style. And I hang out on LinkedIn, Isabel Fortin. There's 100 and some odd of us. I am the only one with purple hair, and I have purple hair on my profile picture exactly for that reason.
And folks, she does have purple hair. Trust me, I can see
I
it.
do.
There's only one other person in that I'm aware of that has purple hair, and she and Diane Mentzer. She's on LinkedIn. I didn't draw the correlation. We were at a conference together, but she wore purple, and hair was purple, right? But I didn't draw the correlation that that was her brand, and that's. Oh, and by the way, Isabel is holding up a purple mic as well. So he's definitely got the purple color. Well, that's awesome. And I love your website Against the Ordinary. I think that's that I love that. And folks, that's definitely a website you need to check out. As I love to do, I'd love to have you give us the final word as we close out.
Nothing of significance has ever been accomplished alone. So, as a leader, that's what your job is to bring people with you. And that's it.
Well, thank you so much, Isabel. It's been a great having you as a guest, and hopefully the hopefully you don't stay as cold or don't get as cold as what I am right now. So.
Not so much cold as snowed in.
You can keep that stuff up there too.
Thank you. I'll do. Just for you though, I'll keep it.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. In order to help others, please subscribe and share this show up with other veteran business owners in your network. If you want specific guidance, feel free to book a complimentary call with Dean at deanvandyke.com. Remember, you wouldn't go into battle alone, and now you don't have to in business.